Hello, world. This is Tuke Edelo. This is my new Radio Free Brooklyn show called What Would Save the World, because I'm a hippie little fuckhead. So I am from Brooklyn. I grew up with, like, mildly yuppie parents. I love them a lot. But I feel that I felt growing up like they didn't think about the world the way I did, because my aunt used to say when I was a kid, she'd be like, oh, Maddie, oh, that's my real name. Oh, no, now you're all going to track me down. I'm so scared. Oh, no. But my aunt used to say, oh, Maddie, she cares about everybody. She wants to, you know, help all the homeless people and help people. And I feel like my parents were not really like that. So I picked sort of a different path than them. I didn't really go to college. And yeah, so I'm just doing this show because I've seen a lot of activist circles and a lot of groups of people that really want to change the world or help people who are struggling and help fix all the many, many, many problems I'm sure you're aware exist. I forgot to turn off the humidifier. Yeah, this is my first show, like I said, and I got Tom here helping me out, Tom Tenney. Yeah, all right, so let's keep going. So I've seen a lot of, like, activist circles and groups, and I feel like everybody seems to think they have all the answers to how to fix problems like the like global warming, the environment, GMOs, social problems. It's like inequality, all these issues, and I'm not really sure how to go about fixing them. Sometimes I'm not even sure if it's my responsibility, if maybe I'm just I have, like, some martyr or messiah complex like everyone I've ever met. So I still want to know what other people think, what other people think could change the world, what could save the world, could fix all these problems I just mentioned. So today there's Fritz Donnelly is going to come in eventually. He's on the train. When he comes in, we're going to talk about communities in the art world, because Fritz does a lot of really interesting interactive performance art where he brings people together. We actually do a show that I perform at sometimes called Circus of Dreams. It's at Bazaar Bar, first Wednesdays of every month. You should come check it out. And so I figured while I'm waiting for him, I'll just talk a little bit about my background in terms of activism. And I'm sort of, like, in some ways really embarrassed about the way I did activism. I dropped out of college to run around with Occupy, and I cared a lot about the issues there, but I was 19 and really, really stupid. So what ended up happening is I was hitchhiking all around the country, sometimes with juggalos. One of my favorite things that happened was I ended up in Slab City. If you've ever seen Into the Wild, there's this trailer park squat way out in the California desert in Yuma, like near Yuma. It's in Nyland, and it's, you know, it's a squat, and there's a bunch of people who are just out there all year round, just, like, drinking and doing drugs. And, like, I was not doing drugs, but it was a really, really crazy place. People were, like, trading dogs for meth. See, this is where I ended up when I said I was an activist. When I was 19 years old, I ended up in the desert in the middle of nowhere with people doing drugs. And while I was there, I met a juggalo named Mullet, who didn't actually have a mullet. And he... sorry, I thought I heard something. And he wanted to go to the Rainbow Gathering in Ocala, Florida, so I went with him with a band of juggalos and a woman named Mama Rain, who apparently is really famous in the Rainbow Gathering world for taking cute young traveling kids all the way across the country, trying to make them spange for her, which means spare change, because we had puppies and we were cute. So apparently she's famous for this, and of course I ended up with this person and decided to trust them. And they would drink and drive, which is really silly. I don't really know how this has to do with activism, but I'm just telling some of my stories about where I'm coming from on this. This is about driving around during Occupy. That's where I ended up. And I was really unhappy with the way I behaved during Occupy and the way I used that situation, because I think that could have been a really great opportunity to help get together communities, and I just don't think I took advantage of that opportunity. So what I did is I came back to New York and, like, I'm from Brooklyn, like I said, like, screwed around a little bit, made, like, a crazy student film that was really, really, really awful. And then I moved to a commune. and that was the best experience of my life. We ran a business collectively, and all the money from that went to keeping together our infrastructure because we grew a lot of our own food. We keep animals in an ethical way. And I really loved living there because finally I felt like I was surrounded by people who had actually made the commitment to try to actually work towards their ideals, which is something I don't see very often. Like I said, I wasn't always that person who tried to do that. And eventually I had to leave because I felt really isolated because I'm a performer and I like a lot of attention. And when you're living on a farm with 30 people who are into gardening and into cows, it's like really, they're into cows. it's really not cool to be performing for them all the time. Sometimes they're into it. Some of the most beautiful things that happen there, it's the music and the way people come together. People do want to play music together, but just not all the time because when you're surrounded by the same 30 people all the time, you get really, really sick of each other. But you also get to know the best of people and the worst of people. You get to know people really well. And one of the best things about it for me was living with people who are a lot older than me, sometimes by 30, 40 years, who were my equal because we ran this business in a non-hierarchical way. It was run in an anarchist way. Anybody who wanted to take responsibility for a certain area could do it. Anybody could work within it. There's no bosses, basically. When I would do customer service, if someone was like, I want to speak to your manager, I'd be like, well, I am the manager. And I don't feel like dealing with your shit. It would be nicer than that, though. But, yeah, so we didn't have any bosses. And, so that was really great because we ran a business that was all about agriculture. And we actually tried to fight Monsanto with the Organics Association. Because, you know, if you know about Monsanto, Monsanto does this crazy thing with GMOs. So I am not one of these people who you can just say, oh, you don't believe in vaccines, you don't believe in this, you believe in GMOs, where's your tinfoil hat? No, that's not what that is. I understand that genetically modified organisms or genetically modified crops could be an excellent thing, like for drought-resistant crops. Like that could really give people in third-world countries where there's not a great climate to grow a lot of crops. It can give them an insane amount of autonomy that they don't have now because in many ways they're relying on the Western world. And that's just not cool because I don't think we're doing a very good job. And so that could be very helpful because I had a biochemist who actually lives on a commune explain to me how GMOs work. And it has to do with like they extract drought-resistant genes from plants that already are drought-resistant and reorganize them because there actually are natural plants that are drought resistant. So that's really cool. And I think that if they did enough testing on that, that could be really cool. But the problem with Monsanto is that Monsanto makes these pesticide resistant crops. And the pesticide resistant is very different because the pesticide they're resistant against is the Roundup pesticides, which has glyphosate in them. And glyphosate has been linked to kidney disease and cancer. And also, when you're gardening, the pesticide-resistant ones, you can spray with Roundup before they've even emerged out of the soil, which you can't really do with a lot of crops because, you know, they're trying to get away with not weeding, which I don't really understand, like, what the point of gardening would really be if you're not going to weed it and get on the ground with it, I guess, for commercial purposes. So I guess that people always want to be like, oh, well, that's going to save the world. We need pesticides to grow more food. Yeah, that doesn't make sense because I'll continue explaining. When you spray a crop with pesticides before it's pre-emergent, you're spraying way more pesticides than people typically spray on the soil. And a lot of plants are not pesticide resistant. And these pesticides can stay in the soil for a while. And that means that it's going to be very difficult to grow a non-Monsanto crop in that same soil, which means they're damaging the soil, which means that Monsanto is going to or is working towards dominating agriculture in terms of corn. And corn is a huge, huge product. Look at the label of almost anything you're eating that's not just like pure produce that's processed. You will find corn syrup. You will find cornstarch. You will find something corn. So Monsanto wants to take over agriculture. And you can tell me that I'm wearing a tinfoil hat all you want. I'm sure I could make a really cool looking one. So we tried to sue Monsanto because what they are doing is, if you don't know, corn can cross-pollinate very, very far across very long distances, which means if you're growing Monsanto crop and I'm not and I'm your neighbor, your corn could cross-pollinate with mine. And Monsanto was suing farms for a while for having their Roundup patented seed cross with their crops. And so my commune did was join the Organics Association to countersue Monsanto. And the way that turned out was like it wasn't like a ideal thing. I think we got some sort of settlement from them or something as an association, but it wasn't a really big thing and it didn't really help much. Yeah, but we still tried. And that's really cool. And I really loved living with people who thought like that. And what I was talking about before in terms of music, I like often people there don't have the competition that people in cities have in terms of art. Like living there, I could work 42 hours a week, but not just in the business. 42 hours a week would be work was cleaning, caring for the kids, gardening, working with the animals. My daily life looked like doing about 8 hours of customer service and then doing like 10 hours of cooking dinner for everybody a week and then gardening some days and then taking care of the chickens every single day. And then, so that's pretty leisurely. I don't know. I really loved cooking. I loved that I could just cook for everybody and have that be my work. And then other than that, I could spend as much time as I want on my art, and I didn't have to worry about trying to make money off of it because I didn't really have to worry about money. And I was doing work that I, for the most part, enjoyed, like I said. But the thing that's strange about it is I don't really agree with capitalism because I don't agree with money. And I'm sure in this show you'll hear all about that, and I'm sure plenty of people on the show will argue with me about that, and it'll go on, it'll be heated, and I'll never change my opinion because I'm really intense, even though I should try to change my opinion because that's just ignorant to never think about your opinion. So maybe I'm just ignorant. Maybe I will learn that I am ignorant within this show, and that'll be cool. That's part of the reason I'm doing this show is because sometimes I feel like after living on a commune like that, I had a certain set of ideals, and I was so used to everyone around me for the most part agreeing with me. And now that I'm out in the real world, people don't agree with me that often. So am I crazy, or are they crazy, or are we just really bad at communicating? Do we really, for the most part, do we agree on all the same things, or do we just have insane levels of differences in what we think human nature is? That's something I run into a lot. I think a lot of people think that humans are inherently selfish and not trustworthy. People think that people are inherently lazy. And I think that I don't think people are inherently selfish. I think that people decide to be selfish, and I think being selfish is one of the most lazy things in the world. I do think that. And I think that that's what a lot of the problem is. I see a lot of people working for me, capitalism, me, all the money for me, and just the people that I directly care about. And I think that when I first moved to the commune, there was a woman who said to me, when I do things, I try to think about the next 7 generations and how it'll affect them. And I don't know if she really lived by that. I don't know. I don't know her that well. I think she probably tried her hardest. And I think that a lot of people do live by that on some level. But a lot of people I run into tell me they don't actually live by that. They're like, no. I just think people are lazy. Like, why should I care about other people? So I don't agree with that. I don't think that people are inherently lazy. I don't think that some people just won't work, and that's why I shouldn't care about them, because they're just not going to work and they're not going to contribute. I don't think that's true. I think that there is a very strange way people view contribution. I think it's really strange that I could play music on the street for money and have people be like, get a real job, but someone who makes frozen yogurt for a living is doing something that's worth more. I'm not saying either of those things are worth more or less. I just think that they're both worthwhile. Like, if somebody is working on projects or trying to do things to contribute, then they are contributing. And every person I've ever met contributes in some way. And people disagree with me, but that's what I think. But what I want is people to argue with me on these things, and I want to hear what they think we could do to fix all the problems I listed off before, like environmental issues, GMOs, social issues. And I think that some people will tell me some of the things that I think are issues are just not issues. And I'm really excited about that. So like I said, music was really, really an amazing thing on the commune, and I'm going to play a song by someone I met within the community's movement. I've been to a lot of communes and met a lot of different people, and I'm going to play quite a bit of their music and other activist-y type folks, their music, or world changers, as I like to call them, world savers, even though they probably wouldn't like being called that, because a lot of people want to dismantle their ego. Maybe in like a new agey way, like I want to dismantle my ego. I want to have an ego death. I want to take a whole bunch of acid and break down my ego and then talk about how much greater my ego death was than yours. That's something I run into. I don't typically run into that on communes. I typically run into that on people on the street who seem to think that the reptilians are real, although I've had some changing ideas about that recently. We'll get to that later. So I'm going to play this song by somebody named Marduk the Sun God, and I've met him within the communities movement. I think his music is really beautiful. It's sort of, the song that I'm going to play reminds me of when I wanted to leave the commune and how sad it was for me to say goodbye to the sense of community that I'd found. And the sense of community, I don't really know how to describe like what it feels like when you're there. It's not a constant, but it feels like this like floaty feeling in my stomach, and I feel like just really happy. Like I visited there like recently for a wedding, and it was really beautiful. I cried when I left, but for whatever reason, something in me is telling me that I'm not meant to be there right now. All right, so Marduk the Sun God, if you like it, you can hear more of him on soundcloud.com/Marduk/the/the Sun God. There's slashes, little dashes in between the words. All right, so I'm going to play this song. It's called What It Is So. Okay, I got to figure out how to get in there. Derp, 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 bum, 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 bum. Okay.
Sometimes I feel compelled to try but fail to find some lovely little lines I spell so to describe the unease that I typically hide inside my room. Retreat, repeat, it's all alright, it's all alright, it's okay. This is just a game, a map we're making up. Not real, but good enough. I've had my fill of feeling down. Get up, get on my feet, get out and find a face and see. We could make some big believe and crack some jokes and speak of hope. Whatever we can do to cope, telling myself lies like how this is fine and this is really love. But is it get well, with buttons and lace, yeah, I made it myself. I did it, I tried, but it won't help, 'cause it is what it is, so.
That song just kept playing on repeat, and I kind of fucked it up. But finally, Fritz Donnelly is here, and I'm super excited. Fritz, why don't you try talking so we can test this mic?
Hey there, Tuk. How are you?
I'm doing great. Keep talking.
So on my way here,
I think this is fine.
I passed a sign that said unsolicited animals, and there was a panda bear in a tree. And this is true. But the closer you get, then you realize it's not a living panda bear. But it's just outside, and it's a stuffed panda bear in a tree. One of the unsolicited animals.
Somebody just put it there? Or was somebody made like a art piece that was like this and just left it somewhere?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's not asking for you to do anything. I think it's an unsoliciting animal.
Oh, it doesn't want anything from you.
It doesn't need anything from you. It's fine. It's not, in that way, it's not human.
Oh, do you think all humans want something from somebody else?
Yeah, from other living things, yeah.
Really?
I think that's what makes us human.
Yeah, I think I want stuff from other people, but I also would prefer if they wanted stuff from me also. Like, I wouldn't like it to be a one-way thing.
Right.
So, Fritz, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit?
Sure.
So Fritz Donnelly, and he does a show on Radio Free Brooklyn also called Fun with Fritz. So,
yeah.
Go.
I am a human being. I am.
I'm a fairy.
Sure. Yeah, well, yeah. So I have and the way I know that is from the way I got here today. I used a network of kinds of transportation, and that seemed very human. For a former, like a former tree-dwelling ape, there's not enough use of the vertical space.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking on the way here, if we turned the city sideways and we were to climb, have to climb through it, you know, instead of walking on all the streets, we'd just climb up.
Hey,
how that would turn the daily grind into like a whole new thing. And then to go home, you would just slide. You know, so if you live downtown, it would just be like a slide down from uptown. So it would be the real, it's the thing that we want. It's the metaphor that we're asking for. We just need to take the city and just turn it sideways.
So we want it to be vertical?
I think that might help for, you know, to realize the sort of ape within, to bring that ape out. Because, you know, we have this idea like, oh, we're humans, we're so great, we're this different kind of animal. We're like, we have made it to the top. We've like evolved perfectly. We're the thing. But it could be that the thing is the octopus, you know, or another creature. And it might help us, humility, and also just to realize our animal insight by flipping the city sideways.
That's super interesting, but I'm going to pull my anarchist OCD on you right now.
Sure.
And be like, but we have enough vertical things. There's a lot of psychological top-bottom. Let's make
Ooh,
it horizontal,
I like
man.
That.
Yeah, man. If you just look at everything, it's just one. I don't know if you've ever, like, meditated for a while, man, and just listened to all the sounds of all the other universes
yeah.
and, like, combine them into one. And then the shiny, like, horizontal silver line in front of your nose, and then you're like, whoa. And then you wake up from it, and you're
like
hey, man, everyone should do dimethyltryptamine.
Wow, yeah.
I'm making fun of my conversations I had when I was like a really, really
that's
silly
great.
Hippie kid.
Well, the ocean is that thing. It's that flatness, like that horizontalness. I mean, it has a total up-down once you get inside, but if you just float, then we're all equal on top of the ocean.
That's why we can all walk on water, man.
Dun, dun,
that's
dun,
what
dun.
Jesus was trying to tell us, that we're all the same.
Yeah.
Jews for Jesus. I'm Jewish.
So, oh, great.
Oh, great.
Who would know?
Who would know?
We all know. The yarmulke gives it away.
The yarmulke, oh, yeah.
In your chest there, the mandala.
Oh, yeah, the mandala. My cultural appropriating dress.
Yeah.
And my invisible yarmulke.
It's great. Tuka's dressed in a green dress with kind of like an eye swirl octopus in the center. And I'm wearing a gray kind of sweater.
Pink pants, pink leggings.
Oh, yeah, you saw those.
I feel like Fritz, usually when he wears his glittery, his like sequiny jackets, he looks like Columbia from Rocky Horror.
Oh, nice.
I always feel like you look like that. So I actually want to talk a little bit about like looping and some
sure.
of the communities that have been formed around these interactive performances you've done. I'd like to hear like a little bit about how you feel like that saves the world in some way or, like, brings together people.
Cool. Well, I think what we're experiencing now, we have an election, and we are going through a process to exert our voice in that election. And it's frustrating in many ways because of the kind of layers of complexity involved in being able to say what you think. You have to be registered. You have to be in a certain geographic place. You need, like, an address that needs to connect to another thing, all this kind of stuff.
And you need to be lucky
yeah.
for them to actually take your registration seriously.
Yeah, and then you don't even know if it counted or not, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I personally, like, Christina, my wife, she voted. She had to vote. They wanted her to vote provisionally, blah, 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 whatever. And she noticed that her name was slightly misspelled, which it hadn't been the last time she went to vote. But so she saw it on the roll. She's like, no, that's my name. And they'd added a D. Her name, instead of Ewald, it was Edwald.
That's so weird.
Yeah, but everything else the same. Address the same. Everything else the same. And who knows? It might have just been somebody typing it in, you know, like data entry, whatever. But regardless, so there's that. That's on the one side. And then on the other side is like, we have a chance whenever we see anyone to just spontaneously do something with that moment while we're here together. And so that other side, it can have a frame. It can be organized by some ideals, like we want to express ourselves honestly, but we also want to take care of each other. You know, for example, so say those two ideals, that can lead to a kind of like a practice of how can we express who we are together in a way that's very true to who we are, in a way where we're discovering some side of ourselves that is not always expressed because of, you know, the layers and layers of kind of mishigas or bureaucracy or complication mm-hmm. that we just have to do in our lives. So looping is just a way of saying some proposal. It could be anything. It could be like me waving my fingers towards you. And then the loop is you seeing that and you feeding that back to me in whatever way you do, mm-hmm. and then us, you know, kind of like going back and forth off of one another. And then more people can come in, and then it can grow into a thing.
Exactly. I feel like I should explain what looping is. So Matthew Silver, if you know who he is, and Fritz Donnelly, who's here, we were doing this thing for a while, and I think we're probably going to do it again when it gets warm, maybe. People will probably want to do it, even if you both don't do it. It's people just going to different places in the city and doing exactly what Fritz just described, which is like sort of like a contact improv thing. And what you were talking about, it made me realize how much looping is sort of like being each other's audiences and performers. And I feel like I'm constantly hungry for that, which is why I like to perform. And I feel like I improvise a lot better than I do writing because I want to feed off the people in the audience. And I like, and like I was talking about before, is you were talking about how people always want something from someone. And I'm thinking about how, like, I kind of want that, them to want the same thing from me. Like
the same thing that you want from them?
Yeah, which is like a reaction and a response. Mm. And I think that that's what looping does so well. It creates a reaction and a response, and everybody's consenting to that and voluntary, which makes it kind of anarchist in a sense, because anarchism is all about voluntary association.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Voluntary action.
Yeah, it's interesting too how there's still seduction and persuasion and everyone doing things together. I mean, some of the amazing moments are when everyone is doing something different, and then for whatever reason, like an idea or a word or a phrase or a motion, a movement or a decision to lie on the ground or something suddenly seems like the right thing to do, and then we're all lying on the ground rolling across an intersection in Manhattan in mostly skin, and people are like gently stepping over. And mm-hmm. it's like, you know, our ideas of cleanliness, our ideas of like how do we use a public space, how safe are we with our bodies and with each other? And, mm-hmm. and it's men and women who don't know one another, interacting in this consensual way where we all, I think, are striving for that. Because sometimes we'll make, you know, there are moments when people say things that other people don't like, I think, within the group, you know, mm-hmm. that are like maybe aggressive in certain ways or whatever.
Yeah, that wasn't actually something that I was thinking of talking about. But now that we're there, I do think as like somebody who is, you know, at least appears as female, there are some really strange dynamics that go on in those groups. And that's one of, in like looping or any area that I've been or any art show where people are nude and it's not meant to be an orgy necessarily. You know, if people are consenting, that's cool. But I feel like that's a really interesting thing to like be in a very, very collectivist place where people can have their individual things but then also connect and feed off each other and be naked and be very free. People coming in from this outside rape culture, as people want to call it, it's very interesting to see how people deal with that. And that's something I think about a lot, is how to fix that, like in terms of like the theme of what would save the world. Mm-hmm. But like what do you think could be done in groups like that to change sort of the creepiness that people feel sometimes?
Yeah. Well, I think that the activity itself is doing a lot to help that. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like even you once told me, you were like, oh, you know, like, I don't normally get naked just in randomly in front of people, but I really, I feel safe in this kind of structure of, like, this was a performance that I was doing at Bazaar Bar, but I felt like it had a similar type of frame that sometimes looping does, where it's like, you know, there's touch and contact with people, but it's non-sexual. It's playful and it's fun and it's kind of, it's going towards an idea of like being molecules bumping off of one another and like forming a structure together, or critiquing Wall Street, you know, when we were down on Wall Street, and like using the language of like the bailout and bonuses and golden parachutes and things like that, and then kind of embodying that, or like using that sort of self-help talk of the Wall Street guy as those guys were walking by, like, I can do it, I can make it, you know, I believe in me, I'm here for number one, you know,
like. That's so funny. I remember that. I remember being down there. That I remember there being like a money towel that people were like hanging out in. That was really funny.
Yeah.
But yes, that's I'm wondering when I said that to you about the naked thing, because on the commune, I was talking about my experience living on the commune earlier. Mm. I was naked a lot there because it didn't feel like a sexual thing. But oftentimes I feel like out here, it becomes sexual a lot. Like even at Circus of Dreams, like when usually I feel super comfortable when you're there, when you're like in the vicinity that I'm performing, because I feel like other people like still think of it as you performing, but then you like walk away and then like it can be a little strange. There's definitely, I don't even know how to describe it though, because it's like a vibe thing. Then it's like, am I looking for it? Or is it actually, I think it's probably actually there, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, also in a, you know, when we make ourselves spectacles and things like that, like there's a, it's an interesting dynamic. I've tried to, like one thing I've tried to do just in my life, like wearing these kind of leggings. I mean, they're really practical. You can run fast, you know, you can get where you're going. It's good like that. But there's also a way where it's like I'm turning myself into a spectacle a little bit, like a man walking around in tights all the time. And I live on the Upper East Side, so it's like...
Oh, you do?
Especially strange up there. Yeah, we found an affordable place, amazingly.
Wow.
So we're between the parks, and I have a little boy. He goes to school up there, so it's kind of amazing. I mean, things worked out, you know. This is going from living in a windowless space with no bathroom. We'd use people's bathrooms across the street when Christina was pregnant. Yeah, and then we've just ended up finding a place. New York is like half luck and half putting in the time.
That's why I love Staten Island, man. Yeah. And I never forget that I'm on an island. Those are my favorite things. It's like I feel like I'm living this luxury life in New York where I live on an island, but it's the cheapest place in New York, the cheapest borough. Actually, you know what's really interesting? If you look at the map of all the districts that voted for Bernie Sanders, large districts in Staten Island voted for Bernie Sanders. And I was like, gee, one of the poorest borough voted for Bernie Sanders. And I didn't think it was going to go that way because it's an extremely conservative place.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Like conservative to the point where I see like frat boys on the ferry like bumping chests and I'm like, man, you guys got like so much like underlying gay feelings. And like I don't always think that, but with that, sometimes I see it so clearly and I'm like, oh, you poor thing.
Yeah.
Like, I feel really bad, honestly.
Well, I think that can be okay as long as it doesn't come out as aggression, you know. We just live in a funny world where the people who are sort of post-sex, not completely, but like the older people are in charge of like the younger people who are highly obsessed sort of with sex. And so then that becomes like a completely commodified thing. And it like sort of drives our economy in this funny way. So we can't have nudity that's not related to money. And I feel like that's why sort of being naked in a non-monetized way in public and stuff can be a pretty radical thing.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah. But then on the other hand, like you have a society where it's like covering the body can be in a weird way that could be like a way of getting post-sex, right? I mean, I don't think it functions that way, but like in an idea, thinking of ideas, it could be like, oh, if we all just cover up who we are, like are the bodies, then we'll forget about that. And then, or like, another covering of the body might be the internet.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that a lot of it has to do with making naked bodies like a tempting thing, like a thing that, because it's like such a forbidden fruit thing, like I don't feel like that anymore because I've, you know, had like hippie polyamory orgies where we all love each other actually. It's cool. But like, I think that, you know, naked bodies are supposed to be seen as tempting and not like, I actually see naked bodies and I think, I don't really like think that much about it, honestly, sure. anymore. But I think that you said something, so I'm trying to remember what you said that like made me really want to say something.
Like the covering of the body.
The covering of the body, how to become post-sex. Post-sex. That's something that I think that what will make us – I never want to be post-sex. I want us to be pro-sex if you mm-hmm. want to be pro-sex. Like if you want to have sex and it's consensual, by all means, have sex. If you don't want to, that's cool also. But there's also a major pressure on men to be hypersexual and women to either be hypersexual or not sexual at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that – and then if you're not a woman or a man, if you're genderqueer, people just treat you like you're really crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not cool either. I think that there has to be a lot more information. I have this fantasy world. Like, I've talked about trying to run for city council later on in my life.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I don't know if I'd ever be good at that because I think I would get really frustrated. But I've thought about putting condom dispensers on, like, almost every corner or, like, a lot of them. And you know how like you go into a restaurant and it's common standard to see like a CPR instruction thing like on the wall, to just have like straight up sex ed stuff on the back of these dispensers. So it's just common, like you can see how to put on a condom, you can see like what STDs are, where you can get checked in all the boroughs. And people were like, well, people just take condoms and throw them, but you just press a button, you get one. It would be harder to do that. So I really wish this could be a thing, because I think that would help a lot if sex is just like in your face, but not in such a vulgar way as it is. Like the information about sex is right in your face.
Yeah, I was reading this. I think that this is a true historical document. It was like a guy from somewhere in the Middle East visiting some Vikings who had like taken over part of northern Germany, but it wasn't Germany because this was like the 1400s, I want to say. And he describes like the Vikings just, and he's like a pretty civilized guy compared to sort of the Vikings, or at least in what we would consider, I mean, that's
civilized.
A problematic thing too. Yeah. But he was describing their, like the way that they relate to each other, and they're just kind of all having sex in front of each other and doing other things sort of. It was more of a, it wasn't as private of an activity per se.
Bonobo people?
Yeah, maybe something like that. But I thought that was an interesting, it's just interesting to have that take of like, and this through time, you know? Like, I think that humans have experimented with different stuff at different times, you know, matriarchal societies, patriarchal ones. Like, the Roman society is one where it was really fine to be gay. Like, and same with the Greek society,
yeah.
You know? And, or like at least male gay was fine. And like woman sexual aggression was also fine. Like a sort of a celebrated thing, like, So in some way, you know, so like, let's, like throwing ourselves into the future of this. And I did a movie kind of addressing this idea, like, what if you could have all of the partners that you want and the partners could have all of the partners that they want?
It's called polyamory and I live that shit every single day.
And so how do you find it? In my movie, it ends up getting political, which I think all human relations do.
Polyamory is definitely political, if you want it to be, but it always becomes, you know, it becomes about the culture that you live in, and it becomes difficult because jealousy is rampant in the culture through the media, and I think the media is inherently political.
Right.
Because it's about what they want you to buy, which is, you know, business, but that's all linked to the government because it's all crazy.
Yeah. Well, the government is a foil to business, potentially. I mean, it's kind of been taken over in a lot of ways, but like China's an interesting place. I went and visited China and I found it to be like it seemed to look a lot more equal man, woman in terms of types of jobs people did, ways people dressed. Like it was a lot less gender schwanged, as it were. Like the distance between man and woman was a lot shorter. Like you know, you couldn't just tell from far away by like pants or dress or this or that. And there's other places where men, like hip-hop style is sort of like men wearing a dress, like huge super super long shirts and like your pants way down, you know. It's like you're wearing like a dress or a tunic. It's almost like medieval dress style in certain ways.
I think that's becoming more popular. Actually, in the commune it was very common for women to walk around just with like boxer shorts on in the summer and men to just wear skirts.
Right.
And none of us ever wore shoes. That was great. I went there the other day. I just took my shoes off immediately. It was so much fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. You know, we live in this really, like, science-ified world. We could judge whether or not shoes are important. Like, we could figure it out. Like, because there's some studies that show, like, if you wear running shoes that are really cushiony, you can hurt yourself more in different ways than if you run in bare feet. You know, there's that whole barefoot movement. Mm-hmm. And then I run in dress shoes, which are just the shoes I wear all the time, because I broke my foot once, and they were the best for healing my foot.
Really? That's really interesting.
Yeah, so, well... So, but Tuk, I think the project of your show, if I can say real super quick, is a great project. It's great to imagine the future. The future was really thoroughly imagined after World War II. You know, all those novels came out, all the sci-fi stuff. And I don't know if it's been, like, maybe now again it's being imagined, but I don't know if it's been as imagined that well. So it's great to take a minute and to imagine, like, you know, like climbing a tree with a panda bear and having a conversation.
Yes, I really want to talk about utopia. And I don't know if that's, like, realistic at all, but that's cool. So I'm going to say we actually have about 20 more minutes.
Okay.
And you gave me this really interesting idea to talk about what we think the future is going to look like. So I think we should take, like, about 10 minutes and just, like, riff on that. And then I want to make an announcement. And I want you to talk about your show, too, or whatever, anything you want to promote.
Okay.
And then I want to play a final song by my friend Mardok and then close out.
Cool. Great. Yeah. Well, I was reading my friend's book. It's called I Hate the Internet. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're listening to this on the internet.
Hi, friend.
His name is Jarrett Kobeck. And I was just reading it on the way over here. And I think one thing that I like, well, one point that he makes is that the internet is all advertising that we're doing for free for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And unless we're also selling something over the internet, then in a way we're being exploited.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be different ways of dealing with this. One way might be that we just pay everybody some money. Like all of the profits of Google and whatever, you don't even have to take all, but just take, like, I don't know, say 80%, and then just pay them out to everyone, you know? And so you could have this way that, like, companies make money, but then they also have to give back to the people that they're exploiting, like this kind of loop.
How do you feel about post-money, no money?
Oh, well, I think we live in a post-money a lot. Like most of this stuff, like everything I'm wearing was not bought. It was given to me, except for these leggings, actually. Christina got them. But I think that can work, too. The cool thing, I think, about money is it's kind of like language, and it can translate things from one thing to another. So I feel like it doesn't have to be money. It could be based in a different way. It could be conceptualized differently. Like, we have money conceptualized after maybe, like, I read this Buckminster Fuller book, and this kind of stuck with me, that our money is based on the idea of, like, a cow. So I lend you my cow, but then, and you get the milk, but I get all the calves that it has. So the calves are like the interest.
Mm-hmm.
So then it makes sense if a money is like a cow that, well, you have to pay for it to grow and things like that, but I get, you know, this return on it, and then at the end I get the cow as well. So then I've made all the calves and the cow, and then you've had to take care of it this whole time. You know, and I'm benefiting more from that because I own it, whatever that means. Like, I was there first, kind of a thing. So there's this thing that is the history, your personal history, class, in a way, is embedded in our whole system, our whole conceptualization of money. You have to have been there already before the other people, or you have to be, like, in the system before the others.
Yeah.
Like, we came to this, you know, like, we, whatever. I'm from New Zealand originally, but so I'm an immigrant.
You're from New Zealand?
America, yeah.
I did not know that. That's, like, a whole new thing for me.
I was little when I left. But we've populated the world. We're from all over, and that's been happening for, we migrate, whatever, this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, just my only point is that when we came here, the people who were already living here had a completely different system. And we had, you know, a system where our violence was bigger than their violence. And so we could just completely dominate their system without having to engage it.
Mm-hmm.
The cool thing potentially about something like money is that it can get us past violence. I think there's a lot of cases where money has stopped violence. Like, you look at sort of illegal or black market or whatever situations, and violence often comes in because the law cannot interface there, because money cannot resolve. Like, a lot of that money does resolve, but violence can come in more. Now, then you look at institutional violence, and that's probably much, much worse than the individual and personalized violence that we're always like talking about on the news or whatever, mm-hmm. which I haven't watched the news in years. And like, if I see it for a second, it's like highly disturbing.
Yeah. The news is
so
scary.
I don't
scary
know
shit.
What I'm talking about in a way. Yeah. But, well, cause it seems like the news is just a way of, yeah, of keeping people afraid. But, so anyway, there is some, we're great with metaphor and like imagining things and stuff like that. So if, even if we didn't have money, it'd be great if we had something that we could give value to and pass around.
Something that gets brought up a lot in my circles is what is valuable is how much people want to use them or how much people actually need them. And people have a wide variety of needs, but everybody has pretty much the same basic needs. And I think a lot about like, what if everybody was required per se. See, that word required like feels weird in my mouth.
Required though.
Required. But everybody's required to work a certain amount of time in any one of the collectives that I like to envision. Like, there's a food collective, there's a water collective, this and that. And if you work for that, you get a card which allows you access to any of the collectives. Or any of the collective's resources. And I'm sure that's, you know, that's very fanciful and idealistic and like
no, that's great.
Anarchist wet dream kind of thing. But like well, I do think that that could potentially work in a certain kind of society because I just think that money fuels greed because of like the psychological thing behind it. Like if you ever like play a video game
and
you just want to keep getting more points even though you don't need anything with those points, like if you just had all your basic needs met and were able to get your resources or like the things you need to do your projects without having to like stress, do I have enough to get this? Oh no. And then people are like, I feel like people are forced to be stressed all the time.
Yeah. Okay. So here's a couple. Okay. So you're ready for these. Here's a couple quick ideas for you. One is called 55 is free.
Mm-hmm.
You turn 55, everything after that is free. Everything. You want a Jaguar, you want to own an airplane, whatever you want is yours.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 55 is free. I think it would be radical. You'd be giving, I mean, already the old people have power, but I feel like somehow this would make them better. I don't know. Because like, I really like old people and I want to know what they think. They're so wise. Okay.
I like old people. I don't like, I'm kind of hoping like all the racists and bigots die out.
Well,
that's like
the problem.
That's a terrible thing to say,
that's
but I'm
the,
kind of hoping
see, that's
that.
The balance. Like, the old people can be really sort of clueless about certain things that the young people are completely clued in about.
Or, like, the opposite. Like, if I feel like a lot of old people who, like, experienced, like, intense discrimination or genocide when they were younger either have that thing where, like, abuse takes abuse, it forms more abuse, which I don't really like to subscribe to that because I think that hurts a lot of people who are not like that. But even so, that either that or they become super accepting. They're just like, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know what it's like to be discriminated against. Except everybody unless they're violent.
Yeah. Okay, another idea for you is called rent three. It's not rent free, it's rent three. You rent for 3 years and then you own it. Whatever it is, whoever you are, the thing.
That's
so
super-
after 3 years you own it, it passes to you. So it's kind of like where you live you end up getting and hopefully you can't own like a million things then. Go ahead.
So it's really so we have to close down really soon. So
oh, cool.
I would really like it if you could, you know, pitch anything you want to pitch or, you know, a promote or anything. And then I want to make like a quick announcement that I'm really nervous about making.
Okay.
And then I want to play a song and then we can close out.
Okay, wild. Well, I was just going to say that my friend's book I find interesting. It's called I Hate the Internet. and I have a radio show too on Radio Free Brooklyn, which is amazing. It's a great platform for all kinds of people to be creative. My show is called Fun with Fritz. If you want to know more about me, you can look me up, Fritz Donnelly, online, and say hi. Tothehills.com is my website.
Great. I want to talk about something that makes me really nervous. So recently, I remembered a DXM trip I did when I was like 18 years old. So a lot of people know about me. I talk about it a lot in my art. I dated this guy who believed he was the reincarnation of Siddhartha Gautama. This is a very real thing.
That was a good book I read once.
Oh, I'm sure it's a good book, but he believed he was like the reincarnation of Buddha.
Wow.
It was terrifying. And he was like.
And attractive somehow. You dated him.
Of course it was attractive. It was hot. I love those messiahs, especially those Aries, Pisces, cusps. Oh my God. Whew. Anyway, so this is. So we took DXM, and my friends used to call. DXM is a Robitussin, never take it.
I thought
it's
it was
stupid.
Like a kind of bike that goes.
No, that's DMX.
Okay.
DXM is dextromethorphan. It's in a chorocetin. If you ever see anybody taking chorocetin and trying to trip off it, tell them not to take it because that has like an extra ingredient that can collapse their ribs.
And
yay!
I thought you were totally straight edge.
Really? No. No, that's ex-crust punk tip. Don't take the quercetin. Like, if you're going to take it at all, but don't take it. Like, actually, like when your parents say don't do drugs, that's what they're talking about. Smoke weed if you want, but like, don't take that shit. Anyway, so I took it and my friends used to all call him the lizard man.
Mm.
And like, I feel like really embarrassed that I've come to this because I've talked so much shit about the reptilian people and talked so much shit about people who believe in the reptilian conspiracies. Like, I don't believe it on such a high level, but like, I used to read all this stuff about when people take drugs, they can see the reptilians. And I honestly think he was a reptilian.
Well, would he sun a lot?
Would he sun a lot? Yes, and he had this really creepy spine. He didn't have to eat that much. He was like addicted to the internet.
Was
and
he cool to the touch at night?
Yes.
So, I mean, maybe there's cold blood in there.
I don't know. The whole thing really freaks me out because I'm starting to, like, have a lot of issues with, like, reality and trying to understand if that's even, like, a real thing. Is he a shapeshifter or is it, like, a metaphor for something? But, like, I don't know. I've been watching some of those Hillary Clinton videos and I don't think she's a reptilian or anything. But, like, some of the other people they're talking about, like, do you really think Newt Gingrich is a real human being? He's a real human being? His name is Newt.
Yeah. I think this is the beautiful thing is that we're, like, in any one moment, we're capable of that, too.
Do you think I'm crazy?
No, I don't.
I told my friend this morning, and they were like, you need to chill out. And I was, maybe I'm smoking too much weed. Am I smoking too much weed?
It seems like you haven't ever smoked any. You just have such a high energy. I mean, not that I really know, but I haven't really smoked it.
You watch me
ever,
smoke weed, I think.
No, I'm just saying, well, maybe I have. I can be a little oblivious sometimes. No, you look pretty, you know, you have good skin coloring.
Yeah, like, but what if I'm a reptilian? Like, what if I'm just projecting this?
I think it'd be kind of exciting. I'm hoping for another like,
but what if I'm just a drone? You ever read about the drones? Some people believe that the reptilians place certain people here to suck people back into, like, the paradigm of nonsense. And sometimes I, like, wonder if I'm that. And I'm like, I can't, like, talk to a therapist about that. Because if I talk to a therapist about it, they're going to call me crazy and they're going to put me on more medication.
I think it's all right. I mean, the literal reality that we live in is all built in our brains anyway. So if you build it along another line, you know, if you treat it like a gentle metaphor, you might come out okay on the other end.
I don't know. I just, like, I really believe, I'm starting to really believe in reptilian aliens, and it's really freaking me out.
Well, maybe if we could find, like, one of their ships or something. Like, you should be productive about it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Do you believe in reptilians?
I mean, I don't know what there is to believe about them, but I think it'd be nice. I just feel like it's hard to be super energetic if you're reptilian, so you don't seem to be like a because you'd have to be in the sun for so long to heat up your whole body so much, right?
But maybe I'm not, but, like, what if, like, the people running our world are, like, legit reptilians and all this activist shit I've done is just, like, total bullshit and there are, like, reptilian shapeshifters? Like, what if there's reptilian shapeshifters on the fucking commune, like, watching us and, like, making it so we can't get anything done? Oh my God, this is like my nightmare.
Well, be careful though, because I think that's what societies do, and then they go out and they kill a bunch of, like, half of their people because they're like, oh, those half are the reptiles and we're the humans. So
I don't know. We're gonna have to go into this in another episode. Thank you so much, Fritz.
Cool.
So this is What Would Save the World with Tuke Edelo. You can find me at facebook.com/whatwouldsavetheworld. This is gonna be on at Wednesdays 3 to 4, and then I think it reshows, I think, like, Thursdays at like 9 or something. Don't count me on that. I'll fix that on my Facebook page. All right, so I'm gonna play one more song. About it's called Space and Time. It's by Marduk the Sun God again, and if you want to, you can find something about him on www.oldschoolreview.com. It's Never Heard of Him, number 18, Marduk the Sun God. This is called Space and Time. It's about, you know, when you have space and time, it's all just words in your mind. Here we go.
Thanks, Tuke.
Thank you, Fritz. You're amazing.
Universe with dusty books and clumsy words, it's futile. but it's all we know to do. Just a fiction that we're wishing to be true. Never since the split caused our eyes to dim. We fell asleep and dreamt that you were all just someone else who can't be trusted. You must be yourself, you can't be trusted. And you must fear God, you can't be trusted. Even your nature's wrong. There's no such thing as a thing, just a figment of your shattered brain to separate the doer from the does. And to call it a pretend it isn't us. Name will cause the do to do what's happening in front of you. Just a symbol or an now we pin it to. Yeah, when you get that, then it will get you too. Yeah, when you get that, then it will get you too. Albatross and omen at the dawning of the day. And we shrug it off, we say it's all okay. Cause we're in a rush, we must be on our way. But the golden sun, creator gods, they set us up and we forgot the truth. The truth, the truth.
Turn the mic back on. Hello, everybody. So I'm gonna put on one more song. This is about to be some other weird shit. Hold on, sorry. I'm gonna put on a song by another song by Marduk, just because we have another minute. Let's put on Firecracker Fuse. Here we go. Bye, Fritz. Thank you.
Why not?
Night is long, and you know I have been drinking. Looking up, swaying though my feet are planted. Drinking cups, spinning on this fucking planet. You, oh you, oh you, oh you. Full and bright, the moon is real. I've really seen it. You have to. I am assuming what you view, how you view, and you are viewing, buzzing on louder than a firecracker's fuse.